Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
You're listening to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yu.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And on this episode of Books and Boba, we'll be talking with Vanessa Hua, the author of the recently released novel, A River of Stars.
It came out yesterday.
As of this recording, we are recording this intro during Crazy Rich Asians Day.
That's true. It comes out today.
You're probably hearing this a week later.
Maybe 2 weeks later, we don't know.
but we just recorded a really great interview with Vanessa Hua. Rira conducted it.
Yeah, so pretty much the book begins at this maternity hotel in like Los Angeles. I'm guessing it's San Gabriel Valley. It doesn't specify, but it's about...
Is it coded that way?
I mean, it just seems like it. But it's about this factory girl named Scarlett Chen, and she has an affair with her boss, and she gets pregnant. And she gets an ultrasound, of course, illegally in China, and she is told that she's about to have a boy. So she is shipped off to this maternity hotel because her boss is just like, I want my son to have an American citizenship. And there she realizes some truths, I guess, that would change circumstances. And she breaks free of the maternity hotel and escapes to San Francisco's Chinatown with a fellow pregnant woman in the maternity hotel. And it's just pretty much like about their struggles to make a life for themselves in San Francisco and to also like take care of their children. And I think it's a really great novel. Like, it sounds really bleak.
It sounds kind of dark, but I also feel like the way you described it, it's also hilarious. There's a lot of lightness to it.
Yeah, it is hilarious. I think Vanessa Hua is just like so good at writing like comedy in between. there's like a great balance to it, and we talk about it more in the interview.
That's great. It goes to show that not every immigrant story needs to be dark and oppressive. Even though the oppression is there in the background.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just so nice that we are getting more, more variety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, without further ado, here is Rira's interview with Vanessa Hua. Enjoy.
Okay. I like to ask our authors this question when we start our interviews. Where are you from? I know that you're from the Bay Area, but were you born and raised there?
Yes. And in fact, I am back in the same house that I grew up in because after my dad passed away, we moved back to be with my mom. But it's like the next generation of three generations under one roof. When I was a kid, my grandmother lived with us as well. So it was a traditional arrangement of many generations.
So you're second generation Chinese American?
Well, yes. I'm the daughter of Chinese immigrants, American born. So I think by different reckonings, I'm either first generation or second generation.
So I know that you are a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, and you are the writer of the short story collection Deceit and Other Possibilities. And River of Stars is your first novel. So my question is, like, how have you always been a storyteller, or is writing a passion that you discovered later in your life?
I've been a writer as long as I can remember. You know, I still have notebooks, you know, with like Garfield on the cover, and then, you know, with my story scrawled in it, complete with a title page, illustrations, and, you know, stories, you know, the title listed on every other page and my name on the other. And in the second grade, I remember we all had to write short stories in class, and the teacher had everyone raise their hand and vote on their favorite, and mine won. But before I could savor that victory, I overheard a classmate whisper to her friend, "I only voted for hers because it was the longest."
So you've kind of worked in different mediums. Like, you are a journalist and you've written like a short story. Was it difficult transitioning into writing a novel?
Well, I mean, I think whether it's in fiction or in journalism, I always have this desire to tell untold stories and, you know, to sort of follow my curiosity wherever that leads me. Just wondering, like, why and what if and who, you know, what kind of character finds himself in this situation and, you know, how do they kind of make their way out of it? I love working in these different genres. Because, you know, with journalism, your story may get posted that afternoon, that week. And so you're, you know, continually out there, continually engaged with the world. Whereas a novel is, you know, a years long, endeavor where there's lots of twists and turns and, you know, and then so many other things are sort of out of your hands. Like, will it get published? How will it be received? But there's something also satisfying about writing a novel, like, much like, you know, finishing a marathon or reaching the top of a mountain. It, you know, it feels like a substantial effort I put in a substantial effort, and it's really gratifying to kind of see it out in the world.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure you being a journalist, you have a lot of rich material to work with to weave into fiction.
Definitely. I think, and I think I have, as a journalist, I also feel a license to go ask those questions or to do that research. I think I've probably hit up every friend with any sort of expertise with questions like, what does a gunshot wound smell like? Or what circumstances would cause a plane to get grounded? So, you know, and I think, you know, that my journalism training has helped me with the discipline of writing daily and collaborating with editors, and also realizing that the first draft is not the last draft, and that there's always an ability to sort of go back and revise and to understand the, you know, just get it down, and then you can return to it.
Yeah, definitely for a novel, which has like hundreds of pages, first draft is not going to be perfect. So I was fascinated by the premise of your novel. We've heard news stories about maternity hotels where wealthy Chinese pregnant women stay in order to attain American citizenship for their babies. How did you go about researching and building Perfume Bay in your novel?
I first heard about these maternity hotels while living in Southern California and pregnant with my twins. And they're, you know, these houses, they're often in the Asian suburbs, like in San Gabriel Valley or in Irvine. And the neighbors were baffled. They were asking, why are all these pregnant women coming and going? And it sounded like a brothel in reverse. And so having understood this, you know, learned about this phenomenon in news reports, I began wondering what would cause someone to come here, you know, to one of the most vulnerable times in their life. And yet, you know, what did U.S. citizenship mean to them? And the women weren't talking. when the places got sort of busted for code violations for cramming in too many pregnant women in one place. And I think that's a great place where fiction can flourish, that once the official record ends, you can start, you know, you can employ your imaginative empathy to try and understand, you know, one person's hopes and dreams. And there was one news article in particular I remember where a neighbor said that a pregnant woman had knocked on her door saying she was hungry and could she please, you know, give her something to eat. And I began to realize in that the maternity centers, even though they sort of advertise luxury accommodations and, you know, field trips to, you know, different places, to the mall, that it might feel like a prison for some of these women. And so out of that, my character Scarlett Chen was born. And I've long been sort of interested in or been inspired by, you know, having done reporting in, you know, the Pearl River Delta in China and, you know, seeing how, you know, peasant teenagers make their way to the city to find work. It's very difficult and arduous, and yet they are carving a life out for themselves. And, you know, you see that in San Francisco Chinatown, too, in the ways that people come here leaving behind their, you know, everything they've known, their language and their culture, and trying to make a life for themselves and for their children.
Yeah, I think I remember that article about the pregnant woman knocking on her neighbor's door and asking if she could go to McDonald's.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think I remember that. And I remember thinking it was so bizarre. And I absolutely loved how you kicked off Scarlett and Daisy's adventures, because Scarlett steals a van and Daisy happens to be a stowaway. And I thought that was, like, really comical. And it's really funny because you would think that under dire circumstances that Scarlett is in, I don't know, just having, like, two pregnant ladies just kind of team up, it's kind of like a weird comedy in a way.
Right. It's like a pregnant Selma and Louise.
Yeah.
Or in some ways, one pregnant woman running or fleeing is tragedy, but two of them running at once, like actually running like through a parking lot, is actually sort of comical. I mean, something I learned being pregnant is it's like completely absurd. Your body is taken over by alien life forms. You look different, you know, and there's many humiliations and joys along the way, but you know, I think that's what I was hoping to get at with the book, like to sort of get at the sort of the humor and the absurdity of it all too.
Yeah, it's definitely a balancing act. What I appreciated about your book was how many different narratives of the Chinese identity came to play. You have Scarlett, who is a factory girl who moved from like the rural countryside and moved to the city. And you have Daisy, who is an American-born Taiwanese-American with, you know, she has citizenship. She went to fancy international schools. She wields a certain kind of privilege. And I just wanted to ask, like, what was it like weaving all these colorful Chinese and immigrant experiences together?
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's for a long time, the Chinese community or even Asian Americans are, you know, considered a monolith. Like there's only one narrative of how we got here. And, you know, having lived that experience as, you know, American, as an ABC, and also as a reporter and sort of writing about the community, you just see how diverse we are within a community in terms of our histories or our privilege, our socioeconomic status. And so from like an outsider's point of view, we all look same. We all are the same. But you know, there's so many amazing stories out there, like fascinating stories that kind of, put those stereotypes on end. And although I don't think I ever set out to be like, I'm going to break down stereotypes with my fiction. You know, I'm driven by characters, but, you know, that is my hope, that people understand that, you know, come to understand that there are these different histories. And, you know, where we have someone like the old character of Old Wu, he was a paper son and just sort of you know, how he was impacted by things like the Chinese Exclusion Act, and how Chinatown was shaped by that, or how, you know, people in Hong Kong go in to open factories and, you know, in mainland China, and sort of what impact that has and what that difference is. And so I think it just makes for more, I wrote about these histories and these different kinds of lives because it makes, for me, the story more interesting, because it just reflects the way the world is now.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't help but like noticing that, like, it's kind of weird because at the maternity hotel, like, you see the divide in class and privilege among the pregnant women there. Like, you have these rich Chinese women from, like, the mainland, and then you have, like, Scarlett, who is kind of at the bottom of the, hierarchy, because she doesn't have a husband, she isn't mentioning her like wealth, I guess. So the other women there just immediately assume that she has no power. I thought that was really interesting. Also, I found it really interesting that these women are seeking American citizenship for their babies because they see immigration as, I guess, sort of this golden American dream, right? But you have a character in the book, Daisy's boyfriend, who actually goes back to the mainland to pursue a musical career. Can you just like talk a little bit more about that, like how immigration isn't really, I guess, like a linear story?
Right. I've come to understand that immigration is circular, that it's not just one way, and that, say, for the wealthy Chinese who are the Tai Tais, who are Scarlett's antagonists, yeah. They see American citizenship as something, some benefit to, you know, collect as they would Ferraris, or it's just part of, you know, being a global citizen or a fancy purse. Like, it's something that can be collected and bought as just as easily. And, you know, as much as the U.S.'s reputation is taking a beating domestically and abroad, I mean, it's U.S. citizenship is still sort of considered gold standard, even if they never, you know, don't remain here and, you know, just go right back after giving birth. It's sort of like it holds that possibility of safety and security and future possibility. But then we have someone like Daisy's boyfriend, who's ABC, but has always felt like perhaps like an outsider and sort of dreaming of what sort of possibilities might exist in the very country that his parents left. And there is, I don't know if you've heard of the phenomena of ABC or Canadian Chinese going back and becoming pop stars in Hong Kong. And that's something I'd covered as a journalist. And just was always so struck by that sort of circularity, how you go back, your parents left to make a better opportunity for you in the U.S. You went back in search of what they left behind. and then you fall into this unexpected career where you're hugely famous in Asia, but completely anonymous in the U.S. or in the outside of the Asian community.
Yeah, it's really ironic how that happens with the story of opportunity. Another thing I really loved about your book was the sisterhood between Scarlett and Daisy. I mean, you like here you have two pregnant women from like totally opposite sides of the spectrum. They're different ages, different educational backgrounds and temperaments. And they have no money or resources, and they have to rely on each other to find food and income. What do you think their friendship says about motherhood?
Well, I think it's sort of like people who live through some sort of natural disaster or go to war together. you can't help but bond through that shared experience. You know, and that's something that I found as a mother, and particularly for Scarlett and Daisy, since they're living together and trying to survive together and care for each other's kids, especially in those early days, they're going to forge a bond that's lifelong, even if initially they are sort of opposites. And, you know, Scarlett in some ways can't stand Daisy's privilege. And then, you know, Daisy is sort of like wanting to be very sort of active in her journey to find her boyfriend. But they reach an understanding and they form a makeshift family. And I mean, I think that's something that I've thought about, particularly in regards to immigrants, how, you know, how found family is so important. If you're, you know, the rest of your clan is back in your ancestral country, like how important that is to create these, you know, bonds, not only I think for Scarlett and Daisy between each other, but just in the apartment building where they live in Chinatown with other Chinese immigrants.
Yeah, I really like the tenants in Scarlett's building. I really appreciated how vivid you made San Francisco and how you illustrated like the daily struggles of those living in Chinatown. So I really also like I also really liked Scarlett's relationship with her mother and how that changes, like how her perspective changes as she become a mother herself. I guess like this is kind of a personal question, but was there a moment like that for you when you became a mother? Did you kind of had a moment where you're like, oh, that's why my mom or my dad did this during my childhood?
Yeah, I mean, definitely becoming a parent, you can't help but reflect upon how you were raised and what struggles they might have had, your parents. For so long, so much of your parents' life is kind of a mystery because you weren't there. You were just a wink in their eye, right? If that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you weren't there in the most formative times in their life, say, like, you know, when they immigrated or when they were starting their career, you know, not necessarily. And so I think it's given me a deeper understanding, say, of my mother and what it meant for her. She's a scientist, but like to be sort of probably one of the few women of color in her field at the time, or, you know, what it meant for them to move, for my parents to move in this suburban neighborhood that, you know, there weren't that many Asian families, and, you know, but what they must have been thinking in terms of opportunity or what they wanted for their children and their education. It's definitely, my mom is still always my mom to me, just the way that my kids, when they see my book or my column, they have some interest, but in the end, then they're like, well, can you get me a snack? So they're, it's an opportunity to, becoming a parent and being a parent is just a way of kind of understanding the world through different eyes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure like when your kids grow up and they read your articles, they'll understand you more, hopefully. Was it your intention to have pretty much most of your main female characters to be single mothers?
Well, wasn't it happy families are all alike? I mean, there's a sense that if they were married and settled, then there would be, you know, that would be tidy, and there would be no story. So it's the very fact of their single motherhood that makes them, you know, have to sort of figure out their own way in the world, because no one is going to support them or do it for them.
Yeah, I like really. Like Daisy and Scarlett, they're kind of experiencing life in America through their babies. They're experiencing San Francisco for the first time through their children.
Yes, having children forces you out in the world, in a sense. Even if you'd rather just sort of retreat with them and you're exhausted, but you still have to go out, you have to get food, you have to, you know, go to doctor's appointments, and then once they're older, you have to you know, do what you can not to, to go stir crazy. And then it just people, other, their neighbors get involved, you know, bringing them food or just wanting to help babysit or just, it's hard to be a hermit, with a kid. And so that way, and not only that, it also, having children kind of reintroduces, wonder into your life. Like even with my kids, and it's a scene that I sort of, replicate in the novel, but the first time they experienced rain, I remember it vividly, like how astonished they were that water was falling from the sky. Like, and then it did make me like stop and think, like, it is wonderful and miraculous that like the whole system of evaporation and rain falling is like, that's what makes life on Earth. And now that my kids are older, it's made me think about things about, like, how do I teach them about Martin Luther King or about Thanksgiving or about social justice and equality? And just, you think about how you were raised and what you were taught and what you want to pass on to your children.
Yeah, I really, really like that scene where the babies, like, they're looking at the sky and they're like, water is falling. But there's also a scene in the novel when Scarlett is in the immigration lawyer's office and she's sharing these harrowing events that she had witnessed in China in hopes of getting an extension on her visa. And her lawyer tells her at one point that Americans think communists are barbaric. If your story confirms that, they believe anything you say. So I just wanted to ask, like, as a reporter who has reported from both China and the States, are there any Chinese immigrant stories you think haven't been spotlighted in mainstream media enough?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. You see now how like the focus often is on sort of the extremes, or just sort of in they're cast a certain way, or like I remember talking to someone who said, oh, they all hate girl babies in China, don't they? And I remember being sort of, you know, irked, thinking, you know, in my family, my dad was like a huge supporter of his, you know, my mom's career and also of his daughters and our professional pursuits. So there isn't just one story in terms of how like a culture or community is. And I think just, you know, I think sort of a story that now there's been a lot of talk lately is with Crazy Rich Asians coming out in theaters. You know, the first major Hollywood movie featuring a majority Asian and Asian American cast in a quarter century. And then, you know, Pachinko being adapted for TV, or Jenny Han's book, All the Boys I've Loved Before, coming out on Netflix. I think there's a real opportunity for showing Asians not only, you know, in sort of more familiar narratives, but also just in a rom-com, in, you know, everyday life, in, you know, the ways in which we are taking part in helping change the culture at large. I think these are all stories that, you know, certainly I want to tell in journalism and in my fiction.
Yeah, I'm like really glad that we definitely have more variety in stories about the Asian American experience and also the Asian immigrant experience. I just want to talk about this one scene that it's probably one of my favorite scenes in your book, and it's hilarious. I just wanted to ask, like, how did you, like, what inspired you to write that scene where there's like a food cart battle between the churro lady and Scarlett's Han Bao Bao cart? Because I thought it was just so inventive.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, there's a part with fireballs, and that is actually inspired by some friends of mine who they're kind of a little bit, I don't want to say pyro, but they like doing, like I remember we went on a camping trip and they were shooting potato guns, like shooting potatoes off a cliff. And then they would spray hairspray on themselves to light their chest hair on fire.
Oh my God.
So that's how I came to understand that there are sort of many uses of Aquanet And so living in San Francisco, there's a very active food cart and food truck culture. And particularly in a place like the Mission, it's this interesting mix where you have often immigrants, you know, selling the bacon-wrapped hot dogs or the churros or what have you. But then all the people coming out for the nightlife are, you know, tech programmers or... So it's just, it's a really interesting mix. And I think the scene comes as Scarlett realizes she, a place where she had been trying to vend, she has to lay low from there for a little while. So she tries a new neighborhood. And it, you know, it also forces her to kind of leave the confines of Chinatown and its sort of its neighbor. And so, I mean, I think it just came to me as, you know, to keep a story going, you don't make life easier for your character, you make it harder. So, but I think, but there's also, I was striving for a sense of, like the comedy or the ridiculous, because there is just that, that potential in terms of like a showdown on the street and just what, you know, what she has to, the length she has to go to get her business off the ground.
Yeah, it's just like hilarious that when she goes into like the tech district of the Mission, she's like charging like extra. She's charging them twice as much as she usually would in Chinatown. And I thought that was like a pretty common. I guess it's like a pretty common thing in the Asian immigrant experience. Like you have. You kind of have to evolve your cultural heritage in order to like cater to, I guess, like the mainstream public.
Or if you want a long line for anything in San Francisco, just charge more for it than usual.
Charge more,
and then people will line up.
So I'm going to ask you one last question. What are you working on now? What's next?
So I've been writing a lot of essays. Around sort of related, around the launch of my book. But I do have another book that I'm very excited about. It's about Chairman Mao's teenage lover. It's set on the eve of the Cultural
Revolution.
Oh, my God,
I love it already.
Yeah. And it was inspired, like, years ago. I was watching this documentary about China, and suddenly there was a scene of Chairman Mao surrounded by all these teenage girls who were dressed like Bobby Soxers. And it turned out Chairman Mao was a fan of ballroom dancing. And they...
Really? Wow.
Yeah, they were, they were brought in to dance with him and other top cotter. He did take some on as lovers. But, you know, again, going back to this whole idea of the historical record, there really just wasn't much written about them. And so it's my take on sort of what that relationship might look like and how it might have impacted, you know, certain events in the country.
Oh my God, I'm like so excited for this book. It sounds it sounds amazing. Well, thank you so much, Vanessa, for taking the time to speak with us.
Well, thank you for such thoughtful questions and for seeing so deeply into my book. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I really, really enjoyed your book, if you couldn't tell.
No, thank you so much. I really love to hear that.
All right.
And that was Rira's interview with Vanessa Hua, the author of A River of Stars. If you want to follow Vanessa on Twitter, you can follow her at @Vanessa_Hua. That's HUA. And I guess that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Rira, yeah. Thank you for conducting such a great interview. I was sitting in the background, but I learned a lot.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Now I'm like, I didn't realize there was a food truck fight, so that's pretty
interesting. Oh my God, the food truck fight is fantastic. today is kind of a busy day for us. Like, we're both going Crazy Rich Asians today.
Yeah, we're both watching Crazy Rich Asians for, like, the umpteenth time.
Yeah, well, for you, this is only, like, my second or third time, I think.
A lot of things are coming out this Friday also. Speaking of Asian American books, the adaptation of To All the Boys I Loved Before by Jenny Han is also coming out on Netflix on Friday. Reviews are coming out right now, and it's
also very positive. So it's a great week for just Asian American representation on screens.
Yeah, on screens.
And on page, because Vanessa Hua's book just came out, but as you said yesterday, August 14th.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's always tons more.
Yeah, there's a lot of books that came out this month by Asian and Asian American authors. And I don't know if I'll ever have time to go through all of them because every month more comes out. And it's like,
you know, our friends at Lit Celebration put out a pretty good list on Twitter every month. So I think we're just going to share that.
Yeah, probably. And also like Asian American Writers Workshop, they also release new releases on their site. And a lot of their stuff... I mean, they share like independent books and poetry books. Poetry books we don't really cover in this podcast, so
we haven't yet. I feel like we could at some point.
We need like the Yoda of of poetry, because I'm so bad at analyzing poetry.
Yeah, yeah.
If you volunteer as tribute,
and as people know, I just have hot takes. You know, speaking of hot takes, the August Books and Book Club book pick is Crazy Rich Asians by Kevin Kwan, the book that the hit movie is based on. I'm a couple chapters in, and I do have some thoughts already, but I'll save those for our discussion.
Yeah.
I see what they had to do to make the movie.
As with all book to film adaptations, things are going to be tweaked and omitted. Next week, we're going to have a talk with some of our friends about To All the Boys I've Loved Before, because I read the first book and I am almost done with the second book, and I'm going to buy the third book, and I'm really excited to talk about it. This month is Asian August.
Yeah, so if you have thoughts on Crazy Rich Asians or To All the Boys I've Loved Before, please sign up on our Goodreads forums. There are threads for all those topics currently, and we'd love to hear your thoughts.
With that said,
thank you so much for listening. This Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from our Asian American communities. We love the Potluck Collective. Thank you so much for being a part of it. And if you like Books and Boba, you should also check out some of our other shows, such as The Collabcast, The Collabs Bruce, Saturday School, Asian Americana, and Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, among others. Special thanks to Visual Communications for letting us set up our studios in their office. Visual Communications, of course, is a media organization that supports Asian Americans in the media arts. They're the ones behind the Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival and the Arm with the Camera Fellowship. And you can learn more about their programs at econline.org. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Books and Boba. Vanessa Hua's book, A River Stars, is available now, so go grab it. And we'll see you next time on Books and Boba.
Yeah, keep reading.
Bye.